So you were at Willamette?
For 1 year.
For 1 year.
I lived off campus. I joined a fraternity because I had a friend down there, and that seemed to be the thing to do. But Willamette was just, was sort of growing into the modern days. They had rules like you had to go to a convocation every Tuesday and Thursday, whether you wanted to or not, generally with a religious overtone at least one of the days. You couldn't wear shorts on campus. If you drank alcohol, either on or off campus, that was a fireable offense. So there were some things like that that made that a little different, and they required ROTC, and I didn't like that much at all. So that combination of things led me to, although I had had some friends there and I liked it fine, it led me to go to Portland State the next year. And also I could work at Portland State.
Did you not realize when you first went to Willamette, when you chose it, what was going to be involved?
Oh, not really. I mean, you learn some of that when you're there. You don't look into all those things. And most people who are trying to get you to go to the school don't necessarily emphasize those things I just mentioned.
So then after a year, you transferred to Portland State.
Right.
Did you still live at home at that point, or did you live on your own?
I lived at home to begin with. And then I worked 40 hours a week for a lot of the time I went to Portland State.
And what did you do?
Worked in a machine shop, or a couple of machine shops. For John Hill was a neighbor and then ex-neighbor of mine who had a machine shop, and actually two of them, and I would work there. Lots of time, depending. I worked from 3:30 to 11:30 for a period, and I would work, sometimes it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then over the summer.
And you worked on the machines?
Right.
Is that the manual?
There was usually something that was repetitive, and I could come in late and do that on a swing shift.
And you went to school full-time during the day,
right,
and then at 3 began your job, and
right,
worked till 11. That's a hard schedule for a student.
It keeps you focused.
What did you think of Portland State when you came?
I thought it was better than its reputation at the time. It's been getting better since. But I got a decent education, but again, I probably wasn't focused enough. It was relatively easy for me. I worked hard, but I mean, relatively easy in terms of I got good grades, but I really wasn't focused at anything in particular outside of getting good grades and graduating.
And you were an economics major?
Economics and then philosophy. Actually, that in terms of values and approaches, I liked philosophy a lot. And I got enough credits where I could have had a major in philosophy if I wanted to take another course or two.
What area of philosophy did you like?
It depended some on the teachers. There was Professors Newhall and Polonoff I liked a lot and would take their classes, and the ethics was an important one. And I liked philosophy of religion. I liked religion as an area, not because of the upbringing where I didn't have much of that, but I thought it was an interesting intellectual pursuit.
So what is the aspect of study of religion that you like?
Oh, I was questioning. I did that time really questioning why societies go in certain directions. I was always sort of bothered by the United States as an example, focusing so much on Christianity as the right religion, and yet there are lots of other religions with more advocates around the world, and somehow that was intriguing to me. Different cultures, how the religion relates. I became very questioning of the U.S. government about the time of the and U.S. government perspectives, culture about the time of Vietnam, Dominican Republic, and it related a little bit to the ethics, philosophy of religion, cultures.
Now, what time frame are we talking
about? 63, 64. I graduated from Portland State in 64.
For a lot of people, young people at that time, the presidency of John Kennedy was a pivotal experience, especially his assassination. Were you affected by his presidency? Or, I mean, look at President Clinton. Mm-hmm. went on to run for office because of mm-hmm. what he heard.
I bet I was impacted, but it wasn't. I wasn't really being drawn in because I was also questioning a little bit direction of the government. Now, that's. I probably wasn't questioning that much in 61, 62. Obviously, remember the assassination in 63. But then we sort of moved into Dominican Republic, Vietnam, and. I reflected on would it have been different with Kennedy, and I'm not sure it would have.
So the Dominican Republic was something that troubled you a great deal.
That bothered me a lot because that was maybe the first time I'd seen on TV the announcements like the U.S. saying we have no troops in the Dominican Republic, and the background film was mm-hmm. the troops going by in their armored vehicles. And it's a point-blank line, and I think that got back to the integrity question. If we're relating back to childhood, it really did offend me. Mm-hmm. And Vietnam offended me, too, because I thought we weren't really telling ourselves the truth, that is, the country wasn't.
That the leaders were not being honest about what was happening
there? The leaders
weren't
being honest, and just culturally, again, the philosophy of religion probably fits, that we were right for sure, and we had the right values, and there's a little bit too much my country right or wrong. I saw the theme on that had been going on for a long time in terms of our dealing with Latin America, Manifest Destiny, Hubert Humphrey. I mean, that was a century and a half ago. Hubert Humphrey would talk about responsibility of a great power, meaning to say we do the same thing as Manifest Destiny. That bothered me, and then as we started doing that in Dominican Republic and Vietnam and not being honest about it, it bothered me.
Hmm. When you were at Portland State, you were busy with your schoolwork and busy with your job. Did you have time for any other student activities?
No, in fact, it really wasn't very student activity oriented. I did some sort of teaching assistant work for professors, but it was not, there weren't really activities that I participated in.
Were you a scholarship student, and that's why you did your teaching assistant?
No, and I don't even know what scholarships Portland State had. I mean, it was pretty reasonable mm-hmm. tuition then. I had a scholarship at Willamette, can't remember the magnitude right now, but not at Portland State.
Did your brother at this time, did he go on to college also?
He did, but he did, he went a lot of different directions. I know he went to Whitman for a year, to Mexico City College his second year, to Portland State some, and he thought about engineering and teaching and went to law school for a while. Ultimately got a degree, but as I say, it was a lot of years.
Mm. You went right on to graduate school
right.
after you left. Now, what made you decide to do that?
There was not much decision. That was just what you do. I was going to, my sense was you keep going until you finish.
And to finish was, you knew then that a PhD was to be your ultimate?
I just made the assumption. If that's the end of the road, that's what you do. I thought of several graduate schools, but Michigan State, I thought I'd want to get farther out of the area just for experience. And Michigan State, actually at that time I was interested in labor relations or organizational development of industry, which is a little more business oriented. But in the summer of graduating, I went to Europe, and that got me interested in economic development.
The summer after you graduated from Portland
right.
State. And why did you take that trip to Europe?
It was an American Heritage tour, and my mother actually was an advisor, and they needed some help for about 3 weeks as the students split up in different areas. So I went on to be a sort of a student advisor for that three-week period and essentially got the trip paid for.
I don't know what an American Heritage tour
is. It's an organization that gives tours to Washington, D.C. or other countries, and I don't know if it's national or regional, but it's an organization I think that still exists.
Was it designed for high school students?
Primarily.
And your mom was one of the leaders of
yes,
the
right.
tour, and then you went to help with the high school students.
Yeah, so I became one of the four leaders, although not, there were three of them that were a little more permanent than I.
Do you remember where you traveled when you went on this tour?
Most countries of Western Europe.
And there was a focus to the tour?
I don't know. I mean, the part I was most involved with was in The Hague. They were really home stays. We split up into different homes. But the other focus was you do museums and government lectures and so on, travel. It was really just experiencing other countries and seeing the high points.
And what, as you remember it, what were the high points of the tour for you personally?
I was interested in the different cultures. I saw as many museums as I wanted to and churches as I wanted to, but just there's a certain freedom in other countries. Experiencing things different than what I'd seen in Oregon or Michigan. Actually, I hadn't been to Michigan then, so that was really my first time out of the country. And so that's the standard experience. When your first time out, that's exciting. And
did you have a favorite country when you went?
I liked East Berlin just because of the intrigue of going through the gates and walking around and the World War II damage. I got, interestingly, when you're raised when I was, you don't learn much about World War II because the classes usually run out of history in the 30s or so because you can't quite finish the unit and you don't study as much that's contemporary. And I became real interested in World War II. That's some of the reading I'd pick up over there was reading about Nazi Germany and so getting into East Berlin was real interesting from that point of view.
Well, now East Berlin was a real example of, you know, the confrontation between the communist world and the Western world. What were your attitudes towards the communism at that point?
I tended to become more positive about at least a socialist approach to countries solving their problems, and part of that was a reaction against what the U.S. was doing. And as we were sort of digging in on values, I wasn't convinced that was the right way for other countries. So I was interesting to get a. I wasn't real impressed with economic development in East Berlin. But it was interesting to see another culture functioning. And it got me interested in teaching, when I got into teaching on comparative economic systems. And
Okay, I have to make sure it's... So then you went on to Michigan State, and you studied economics,
right,
with an emphasis on comparative economics?
Economic development, international economic development. An interest in South America.
And was Michigan State a strong school for economics?
At that time it was pretty strong. They had listings of top 10 and top 20, and it wasn't one of the top five, but it was in the top 20, and they had some pretty good people. As I say, I went there partially for labor relations and organizational development, but when I got there I decided economic development was what I was interested in. And I got a dissertation professor who had just spent time in Argentina and Colombia. My interest in South America really developed out of that.
Now, as we're transitioning to your graduate school, I want to just ask you, when you were at Portland State, you said you really got very interested in philosophy and had enough credits to really consider it a major. Did you ever consider really going on and studying more philosophy, or did you always think in terms of more practicality?
Yeah, I didn't think it was too practical. And actually, at Michigan State, I took history of economic thought as one of my fields, which is sort of like philosophy.
So it's sort of like a practical application,
right,
of philosophical ideas.
Right.
At that point, while you were in graduate school, you said you went on because it was an expectation for you personally to just go on as far as schooling allowed. You said your mom had a graduate degree, and so did you come, was your mom influential in and encouraging you to stay in school? Or
I don't know that she was explicitly. It just never was a question to me. I assumed that I would go on. So there wasn't any encouragement necessary.
Did you have teachers in high school and in your undergraduate work that said, you're such a good student, you need to go on as far as you can?
No.
It came from yourself?
I just assumed that's what I'd do.
So at that point, while you were in graduate school, what was your expectation of using these advanced degrees?
I wasn't certain, although you get an orientation from, if you're getting a higher degree, that probably teaching, who knows what else. But there was sort of a natural evolution to teaching, although I could have done something in economic development in South America, and probably would have had it not been for a draft board.
So what was it that you wanted to do in South America?
I was going to become a director of a research institute in Colombia, and that's a little longer story. But I went through the program pretty fast because, again, I'm a finisher. And so I got my degree actually faster than anyone had at Michigan State, because when I did my dissertation in Argentina, and then I finished my dissertation, seems like I really did most of the writing by the time I was, before I was 25, and then I did my all the oral examinations and so on when I was still 25. And it turns out I said I would accept this job in Colombia at the Research Institute, and came back to see the family before I left, and the draft board basically said, you can't leave the country.
So this is 1966?
67.
67. And so remind me of how the draft boards were working at that time. Was there a lottery or?
No, at that time, I can't remember for sure. I don't think there was a lottery at that time. It was a matter of you needed a deferred occupation or to be 26 or over. And they essentially said, you're either drafted or you need a deferred occupation.
And going to out of the country didn't
count
as a deferred occupation.
That's right.
What were the types of things that?
Teaching was one. And so I found myself in August of 67 in that position. So I called Portland State and Oregon State, the economics departments, and said, I've got a doctorate degree. Actually, I wouldn't formally get it just because of the flow until the fall or December 67. I think they did it at the end of the year. But I'd passed everything, so that wasn't a problem. And two of the three universities had a spot. Nowadays, you'd have 150 applicants a year in advance. But at that time, a call in August led to a job.
And so that's how you then went on to Oregon State.
I ended up at, and actually one of the Oregon State professors in the economics department, Floyd McFarland, had been a Fulbright teacher in Argentina and located in the same area where I was living and doing my dissertation. And he wasn't there the whole time, but I knew him for 3 months or so. So there was some contact. And I called up there and went out and had lunch with the economics faculty, and they said, okay, you're hired.
Now, when you did your dissertation, what was the topic of your dissertation?
The impact of highway improvements on agricultural production.
And that was based in Argentina?
Right.
So was the impact of highway development on agricultural in Argentina or throughout South America?
It was in Argentina, and actually it was a particular highway. My dissertation professor had told me that Highway Route 35 was not paved, and it was an important economic development highway, and I could study the impacts of paving it. And it turns out when I got there, a lot of it had been paved. I mean, he had seen it some years earlier. So there was just a 35-mile stretch or thereabouts that wasn't paved, and my dissertation became more focused on what would happen if that were paved. And that would be, maybe it was a more interesting assignment.
And you were in Buenos Aires?
No, in Bahia Blanca, which is about 12 hours by car south of Buenos Aires.
For 3 months, you said?
A year.
A year. You spent a year in
basically
Argentina?
Basically, an academic year. It might have been 9 or 10 months.
Wow. And you said that when you were in college, Or was it in high school that you had studied Spanish?
I did 3 years of Spanish. I got down there without speaking much Spanish, but I was alone and I was out interviewing people, and you tend to speak what you have to speak.
How did you compare your time in Argentina with the trip that you had taken to Europe?
I wouldn't compare it much. Europe was a sample of one country for 3 days and another for four, and it was pretty concentrated in Argentina.
Did you feel at home and comfortable in Argentina?
Oh, I did. There are some things I like more than others. I attended in Buenos Aires. Right now I like high Andean cultures or Guatemalan Mayan cultures. And what I found there is that the Argentines have been very efficient in terms of eradicating their Indian populations, and that was not attractive to me. Most of the culture was Spanish, German, Italian, and so it was really transplanted Europeans. And that was all right, but it was not quite as interesting as it could have been.
Now, you've briefly touched on the fact that the advice of your draft board was that you not leave the country at that point. 1967 was the beginning of the big buildup, 66, in Vietnam. How else do you think the Vietnam War affected your life or your thinking?
I remember wondering whether or not I wanted to come back from Argentina. Mm. My dissertation professor had some advice on that. I think it made me, at the time, it made me more cynical and more questioning of the government, and maybe more interested in living somewhere else, doing some things with other cultures. I wasn't convinced we were right. I mean, I was convinced we weren't.
And it seems that you came on that some of those attitudes earlier than much of the population. So did you, when you were in school, did you feel that there were a lot of other students that had similar feelings, or were you
not on
the cutting edge of that
cynicism?
I'm not
sure if it's cutting edge or not. I was there earlier than lots. And I was not involved in, Portland State didn't have lots of organizations. Michigan State had a little bit more opportunity to get into those issues, because a bigger campus, and they had a Vietnam project actually in the early 60s, and was very instrumental in the support of the Vietnam government. And so we had people on the campus who had firsthand experience, and I think were wrong, and we had some pretty good debates there.
But it seems that it was an environment that fostered a lot of reflection and thinking about it, about Vietnam, maybe before much of the population did. Did you take part in any protests?
Oh, not per se. I mean, there are some things that some of the debates and lectures I would be interested in, but I don't think there was a real protest as we think of the March on Washington or anything.
Now, when you went to Oregon State to be a professor, you were there for 5 years, so those years were the real years of great unrest about the war, and you were in a student environment. Did you continue in this mode?
Oh, I continued in the mode, but of the 5 years I was at Oregon State, I wasn't for about 2.5. I had a Fulbright teaching in Peru, and I taught for 2 different semesters on this World Campus Afloat program, or now known as Semester at Sea, where you sail around the world on a ship and teach classes while you're at sea.
So you went and began teaching in the fall of 1967.
Right.
Do you remember what your courses were that you taught?
Mostly principles of economics. What they needed was someone to fill in there, and the people who'd been around longer were teaching the upper division courses generally.
So is this the principles of economic, like the basic?
Right.
beginning. Is it a course that's required of most students?
Of lots of people, okay. and not necessarily most, but of lots.
But beyond, more than just economics majors, or
right.
Did Oregon State have a required economics class?
Well, for some. Pharmacy, for example, was a big program, and they required economics. Some others did, too.
My college had a required for English majors, even. Mm-hmm. I had to take economics, so I didn't
had
know.
Had to be good for you.
I hope so. So then you taught, you said you got a Fulbright.
Yes.
And at what point was that?
It was 1968, and it started in the summer of 68. So once I finished my first academic year at Oregon State.
How did you decide to look into the Fulbright?
I wanted to travel again, and I had met Floyd McFarland in Argentina on a Fulbright. Yeah. So I had some literature that he had, and I just applied to a university in northern Peru, and it worked.
So is that how the Fulbrights work, that you find the school that you want to go to and you apply to the Fulbright? And
no, there are openings, and so maybe in the previous year the Fulbright Commission had determined that they would have one opening in Lima or one in Piura, Peru. That's where I was. Maybe there would be one in Ecuador, and I sorted through and decided on that.
And then the Fulbright lasts a year, an academic year, or
a
calendar year?
Academic year.
And are you free then to study how you want? Or
there was teaching.
Teaching.
I was
okay.
teaching economics in Spanish. It was an interesting year because I had not done that before, and I hadn't taught that much. I taught at Oregon State, but I taught international trade, and I was dissertation advisor. I don't think they made great use of me, but I did taught, and I did some advising of students. And
is that Fulbrights are always teaching?
No, there are a variety of different kinds of Fulbrights, but that was a teaching.
Right. And what was the name of that city in Peru?
P-I-U-R-A, Piura.
And how big a city is that? Is that?
I forget. I think the environs, it was like 100,000. Hmm.
And how did you like Peru after you had been in Argentina?
Where I was living in northern Peru was somewhat desert-like, and that was okay. It was an interesting experience. I liked it better, actually, but partially because there were more indigenous heritage, and it was possible to travel into the Andes and do some interesting things, see more Indian cultures. So I clearly like Peru more.
And so you were able to continue your interest in the early artifacts and the mm-hmm. early history of indigenous people. And all right, so then you came back after a year to
Oregon State.
To Oregon State. And then when did you begin doing the Semester at Sea program?
Well, actually, that after being back at one term, I had a chance to teach a year in Turkey. And I decided not to, just mm-hmm. thinking it wasn't quite fair to the university to come back for a term and then leave again. So I didn't follow that through. So the Semester at Sea came to mind. I can't remember when, or World Campus Afloat. But I started in fall 70.
And is that a program that Oregon State runs?
No, that was at that time Chapman College. It's now University of Pittsburgh.
And then you would sail? Did it go a certain place? Or?
Oh, it went to, each semester was about 12 different countries. And it was a full semester, so there would be 400 to 500 students on ship. It was fully accredited, regular classes, 60 or 70 faculty and staff, 200 crew members. And every day at sea, we'd teach. And then in port, we'd do educational experiences and other things.
And you did this for two semesters?
Right. Actually, I did three, but the two during my Oregon State years.
And so in all the time you taught at Oregon State, they probably didn't recognize you because you weren't there very
some coming and going,
right.
That's right.
But you continued then through this semester at sea, really nurturing that interest you have in other ways of living and other cultures and openness.
Yeah, that was a good opportunity, because I have now, through three semesters, I did another one in fall 74, but I've seen most countries with a deep water port. I mean, I've been around Africa and around South America and around the world one direction or another, so I think I've seen all the continents and a pretty good sampling.
So your own, at this point, your own personal life, you're sort of, you don't have roots very much, do you, because you're some of the time in South